You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Negerbauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney, and today is April 1st, 2020. I am going to, like I have before, skipped over our upcoming events and news section because all that's in the news right now is COVID-19 and everything is canceled. So I just want to jump right into talking with our guest today. I'm very excited. We are going to be talking with Dr. Holly Fernbach of SR3. Welcome back to the Whale Scout Podcast. I am very excited today. We are joined by Dr. Holly Fernbach of Sea Life Response Rehabilitation and Research, also known as SR3. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you are using these aerial drones to study the body condition of whales. Can you give us a little description of how this works and how you got involved with this type of research?
Sure. Yes. No, I'm hoping to. We actually, in collaboration with colleagues at NOAA Southwest Fisheries Science Center, we actually pioneered the use of drones or UAS to monitor body condition of free-ranging whales. And so our first effort was in 2014 with the northern resident killer whale population. We're just blown away at what we are able to, the information we are able to collect from these high-resolution aerial images. And so we shifted from using helicopters that we'd been using for the southern resident killer whale population to monitor body condition starting back in 2008 to entirely using drones. And so from these images, we fly very non-invasively at greater than 100 feet above the whales to collect these incredible images, and we're able to get quantitative measures of body condition. And one of the strengths of the southern resident killer whale population is that we're able to monitor individuals over time, so we can look at seasonal and annual changes. And it's where with the Sounders population in northern Puget Sound, we're able to do the same thing. And so we're able to look at individuals and see how they change. And for the Sounders, it's going to be just over a couple month period each year when they have their feeding stopover.
And so by body condition, you're meaning skinny, fat, pregnant. How exactly do you tell if a whale is in good body condition or poor body condition?
Well, one of the things, just from a single image, we could collect more than 60 individual measurements. And so what we do from these images, we have an associated altitude from the drone. And so we're able to link this altitude to pixel measurements on the images. And so we collect full body profiles. We collect for the southern residents, especially, we do a series of measurements around the head, because when animals lose condition or gain condition, you see these marked changes just behind the base of the skull. And so we're able to identify, yes, if animals are skinny. We're able to identify if individuals are pregnant from these shape profiles. So we're collect, again, some individuals, some images we might be able to get, you know, 3 measurements from, and some, as I said, we might be able to get over 60.
For the southern resident killer whales, you're taking measurements throughout the year. And so how does this work? Are you, you're taking the drone out on a boat? How successfully are you able to access all of these individuals to track them over time?
Well, it's one of the strengths of the drones that we use is, again, we can do it very non-invasively, and we're able to safely hand launch and catch from a research vessel. And so we take the SR3 research vessel out, and some days, if it's beautiful weather, then we actually just do surveys and we look for the whales, and then sometimes we you know, get notified that the whales are heading in. And so then we're able to go out and find them. For the gray whales, we just head down into the Puget Sound area and just look for the whales. But there are a lot of observations from shore even that have, you know, been able to confirm that the animals are still in the area.
So earlier this month, you posted on your blog, on your website, that you were able to encounter J-Pod, and that those animals were looking in, quote, decent body condition. Can you give us any more details about how J-Pod looked that day?
Sure. And we've actually been able to, we've had a number of days that we've been able to encounter J-Pod. And so each day, you know, we we're able to collect images of different individuals. And so from multiple encounters, we're able to get all of JPOD. So we've been very pleased about that. But the decent body condition, so we used to just have efforts dedicated in May and September. But as you mentioned, we're now shifting to do this more year-round data collection, because you can't always predict when the whales are going to be in the area. And so based on our assessments in September, where we had a number of individuals that were, we identified as animals of concern, so poor body condition, they were very lean. From the just an initial, we still haven't done the quantitative measures of JPOD yet from this year, but just from an initial assessment of the images, they seem to be improving in condition. Some of them are still lean, but overall we didn't have any animals of concern. As I'm sure you're familiar with, across the past number of years, we've had animals that we've identified as declining and likely terminal condition, and those animals have subsequently died. And so it was actually very promising not to have any animals that raised big alarms during this winter sampling.
Do you have any idea why that happened, why they had a good winter?
There've been, you know, it's especially on the Canadian side, and in recent years, there've been a number of changes in fisheries. So it's a good sign that they've been spending more time around the Fraser River, and maybe they've also been changing where they're spending time. They haven't been, you know, along the west side of San Juan Island as much, you know, changed that residency. And so they've seemed to be searching more widely for food. So, I mean, one of the things that we've been able to show is, you know, these changes in condition are likely related to fisheries availability, fish, you know, the Chinook salmon. And so it's an indication that whatever they have been doing, they've been able to get more food. So.
And of course, a lot of people want to know about L87, an L-pod whale that typically travels with J-pod. Did you get a good look at him?
No, we didn't actually. So, yeah, I don't actually. We haven't seen him in any of our encounters this winter.
Any idea what might be going on with him?
No, I don't know. There haven't been any sightings of some of the L-pod members since the fall. And K-pod, I think, was briefly seen. But we were actually down in Antarctica, so we weren't able to get any of the aerial images of K-pod. But yes, he has been, I mean, past number of years, he has been hanging out with J-pod. So it'll be interesting to see who he shows up with when he comes back in.
Yeah, hopefully he's hanging out with some other whales, and I guess only time will tell.
Right. No, definitely.
Are there management implications that you are hoping that your research on southern resident killer whales will bring about?
One of the key aims of our project is to be able to inform management groups on the condition of individual whales and how they're changing. And now we're going to be able to do that, you know, throughout the year. So we'll have this winter sampling, and then we'll be able to do the spring sampling and summer and fall. And so we could actually really pinpoint these periods of change. And so we can see if they're increasing in condition or decreasing in condition. And then this could hopefully lead to adaptive management decisions if necessary. So they might be able to make changes in particular stocks at certain times of year if the whales need more food.
Are you noticing differences between pods, you know, between J pod, K pod, and L pod, and when seasonally they might be going through rough patches?
Prior to this year, as I mentioned, we just done the May and September sampling, and so within May we almost entirely had J pod, and so we had one year a couple years ago that we were able to get some of the K pod members. So as far as that seasonal change, we don't have as much data, you know, for the other pods, just mostly for J pod, but we do typically see them in leaner condition in May, and then they fatten up going into September.
Very interesting. So I'd like to shift gears a little bit. You mentioned the sounders, the gray whales that come into Puget Sound. Can you tell us a little bit about these guys and why you are now shifting to do aerial drone photography to look at body condition of these whales?
Sure. And In collaboration with SR3, in collaboration with NOAA Southwest Fisheries Science Center, starting dating back to 2015, we've actually been collecting aerial images of gray whales migrating off the central coast of coastal California. And so this is something that we've collected images of several hundred females and calves over the years. And so gray whale body condition monitoring using drones isn't new for us, but this Sounders local population in northern Puget Sound, we have the ability to collaborate with folks from Cascadia Research Collective, and they have been monitoring this population. It's about 12 whales, some of them since 1990, I think was the earliest sighting that they had. So we have the opportunity to work with John Kalamakidis and other colleagues at Cascadia to help monitor this population, and it's a unique group of whales, and that we're able to, similar to the southern residents, collect body condition of the same individuals over time. And so they have a feeding stopover in Puget Sound to feed on ghost shrimp, and so typically between March and May. So we're aiming to sample, get repeat samples of these whales, and we're using collecting a suite of health markers. So we're using our drone to collect the aerial images, again, that we're going to be able to get this quantitative data on body condition and how it changes during their stopover here. We're also going to be flying lower to about 8 feet or so to collect blow samples. And so this is something that we've done with humpback whales and right whales in other study areas, and we're able to look at microbiome and the respiratory tract. So we're able to evaluate this respiratory health and relate that to body condition. We're also interested in hormones potentially related to nutritional stress, which we can also get from the blow samples. And then we're collecting small skin and blubber samples. So we're able to look at skin microbiome from the skin on the sample, and then from blubber, we're able to look at those hormones associated with nutritional stress and help ground truth what we're collecting from the blow. And so we're able, hopeful we're going to be able to get these repeat samples of the aerial images and the blow images throughout the season to see how animals change, and then, you know, just get a single sample for the biopsy to be able to ground truth those.
That's fascinating. I had no idea that you could get that type of information also from the breath. You know, I had been also blown away about what you can get from scat, but I had no idea that the breath also held so much vital information. Would this type of research in ground truthing and trying to correlate blubber and skin compared to breath or even scat be able to sort of move away from these more invasive sampling procedures like the skin and the blubber?
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, in collecting these samples, and it's something we've done in Antarctica as well, and actually in off of Vancouver Island with humpback whales, is that just trying to ground truth that the blow is a good representation, as far as, especially with the stress hormones, being able to look at hormones from the blow samples is enough, so you don't have to do the non-invasive or the more invasive sampling.
So as of today, have you been able to get out and sample and take photos of the sounders?
Yes, we have. And Cascadia actually did a post on the success. We went out on March 19th. And so we are able to collect aerial images of 6 of the individuals. And Cascadia confirmed that they've now been able to confirm through photo identification images that all 12 sounders are in the area. But we were able to collect aerial images of 6 of those whales and blow samples from 4 of those whales. And then Cascadia was able to collect 1 biopsy sample. So we had great success just on the one day that we were able to get down there. We had shifted our research plans based on everything going on in the world right now, and we just went down, you know, for a day on our vessel. So, and then came back up. We're actually based off of San Juan Island on Stewart Island right now. So,
oh, fabulous. So you mentioned that you have 6 samples of 6 whales and that there's a population of 12. Is that the total number of sounders that we expect to see in Puget Sound?
There's this core group of the 12 sounders that are seen, but then you also have what they refer to kind of as stragglers sometimes, and so you do have other whales that come into the area that aren't normally seen. Some of them you know, are in very poor body condition. So I should mention too that this study too is a part of a response to the unusual mortality event for the gray whales. And so last year, you know, there were, you know, close to 125 gray whales that stranded in the U.S. and Canada and Mexico and U.S. combined, it was 215. And already this year, there have been 43 that have stranded in Mexico. And a lot of these animals were documented in poor body condition. And so you do have, I think, a number of sounders, you know, coming into this area, but then a lot of animals that are going to be very lean and compromised condition that are going to come into this area and try to do a foraging stopover before they get up to the feeding grounds up in the Arctic. So we're hoping to get some samples from other whales as well.
So far, the six that you looked at, you said some of them didn't look so good?
Yeah, some of them were a little bit lean, but then some looked, you know, they were in, you know, very good condition, actually, surprisingly. I think we were expecting, because they would have just shown up here after that period of fasting, we were expecting for most of the animals to be lean. But there were just, I think, two that jumped out that were in and lean, but not really, you know, concerning condition, but a little bit leaner than the others.
So this unusual mortality event that's going on, is there any thought into what exactly is causing that?
Well, the population of gray whales in the North Pacific has actually been doing quite well in recent years, and so they're numbering in the upper 20,000s now, and I think some of the thought is that this, you know, rapid increase in population levels of gray whales combined with changes in environmental conditions in the Arctic might have resulted in the population being above carrying capacity. And so when that happens, then you're kind of expect to see this, you know, increase in mortality and decline in body condition. It's something we've been seeing in the central coastal California aerial images we've been collecting in recent years. We've actually been seeing females and their calves in declining condition in recent years. And so I don't think it's something that was overly surprising for people, given the rapid increase in population levels. And again, as I mentioned, of the animals that have stranded last year, and I haven't heard for the 43 in Mexico, you know, a good proportion of those animals were in poor body condition as well.
So there wouldn't be necessarily a strong management change that would be a result of this research, but this is more of a natural phenomenon.
I think that's what we're trying to identify, and from the necropsies that are being conducted on the beach as well, as they're trying to identify if there could be some other cause outside of declining condition. It's something that unfortunately, with everything going on, a lot of the gray whale research actually isn't able to go on this year. So a lot of the counts that happen along the coastline, you know, right, those are being canceled. So it's something that being able to non-invasively collect this condition on body condition, even if it is a small part of the population and is representative of likely what's going on, you know, with these animals showing up, the fact that some of them were a little bit lean, some of them more robust, being able to see how they change throughout the season will provide some information that could be applied towards the rest of the population.
Mm. Well, that's fascinating work, and it gives, I think, some people some hope that perhaps the Puget Sound area could be a critical part of the gray whale migration and also a part of the support for our sounders and having this habitat that is able to perhaps be a good food resource for them.
Yes, definitely. And it is important too to, you know, since they do rely on this ghost shrimp population to be able to and see if they are getting enough food during their stopover here. So if you do see this increase in condition and they are getting enough food, that's a good sign for the ghost shrimp population as well.
So earlier in the podcast, you mentioned you are in Antarctica. What other whales are you using these drones to study?
So in Antarctica, we have a focus on, again, because of the, well, actually, this is a, a bit of a shift because with the Antarctic Peninsula, you have such rapid warming. And so it's a region of the most rapid warming in the world. And so we're very interested in how animal health is changing as you see this increase in warming. And so we focus on top consumers like humpback whales and minke whales, as well as their three different types of killer whales that occurred in the Antarctic Peninsula. So we use the same methods. We'll fly the drone high above the whales and collect these high resolution aerial images to look at body condition and changes over time. But then for the humpback whales and minke whales, we also fly lower to collect that blow sample to look at the respiratory microbiome. And so this is something we've been doing in Antarctica with the drone work since 2016, but we also, with the killer whales, we monitor population trends. And so we collect the photo identification images of all the different types, and we're looking at trends over time. So that's what we do in Antarctica. We're also use the drone. We collaborate with Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and Cape Cod area for North Atlantic right whales. We actually had to cancel that field work this year because of the COVID-19, but you know, that's a long-term study of body condition monitoring for another endangered large whale population with the North Atlantic right whales. And then we do in this area, local would study humpback whales and minke whales as well. So
could the drone be used to collect breath samples from killer whales?
It's good. It's something that's a much more invasive with the killer whales, and so it's something that we've actually not ever tried to do that. We try to give them as much space as we can. We've actually changed the way we collect data from these whales, and that we have upsized our drone. So we actually use an octocopter when we can over the southern residents, so we could stay even farther away from the whales. And we can actually even be outside of other research groups because there are permit restrictions on the number of vessels that can be around the whales. And so it's something that we've never, yes, they could be, but we've stayed away from that. So we could just focus on the aerial images for the body condition.
Yeah, I was thinking for certain individuals where they were trying to get breath samples, because, you know, I'm thinking in the case of like J50, where that individual was sick or, you know, in really poor condition. And so they were trying to understand what was potentially going on. And a breath sample from a drone seems a lot easier than a pole, right?
Right, which is, again, that's very invasive with the pole. So yes, I mean, it would allow you potentially to be farther away, but it's one of the things that the vessel does have to be closer to the whales when you're doing the blow sample collection. It's, one of the things when you're high up in the air, you can stay a lot farther away from the whales.
That's all very, very interesting. Is there anything that you would like our listeners to know about your research that we didn't touch on?
No, I mean, I think we covered a lot of it. You know, with our focus, we collaborate with a number of different groups to understand health of whale and dolphin populations around the world. And so it's something that, we're collecting more and more data from more and more populations each year, and just learning a lot about how these populations are changing in times of climate change and changes in management. So it's been, this year we learned something new.
So I will post the link to the Cascadia article where they're talking about the sounders, and I will also post a link to the post on SR3's website about your encounter with JPOD. Are there any other resources that I should point people to who want to learn more about this work?
Well, we have with the SR3 post, with the blog and news updates, we have a number of posts for all of our different studies. And so it is something that they could look back with what I've mentioned about Antarctica. And, I'll be posting something else about the gray whales. And we have a number of manuscripts that have resulted from our work and collaborations with other groups. So there are a number of different opportunities, to learn more about the research we're doing.
Thank you so much for coming on our podcast today, and we look forward to hearing from you again and learning more about your research as time progresses. So thank you very much.
Okay, well, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. As always, you can go up to whalescout.org to learn more about our podcast, listen to past episodes, and find links for additional information from Dr. Holly Fernbach. Also, the podcast is on iTunes, so you can go up there and subscribe, and podcasts will be sent directly to your phone whenever a new one is posted. Thank you so much for listening today. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information. J'entretiens ma gueule négligée.